Welcome to No Filter Sports. Today's date is August 6th, 2020. It's a Thursday, and thanks for joining us. We got we got one of the most well-traveled baseball players in history coming up a little bit later. Our own Jim Essien, who graduated from Troy High back in 1969.
He lived in Troy. He went to a small school inside the city of Detroit, actually. One of the great all-around high school athletes Detroit's really ever produced. Great.
Why did it say in his biography that he graduated from Troy
High? Because his kid, Jim Essien Jr., went to Troy. His kid's a minister now. He was a real good athlete, too.
Oh, okay. So his kid is the minister.
Oh, his kid is the minister?
Yeah.
Well, wow. He has such a twisting, winding career. In fact, he was traded for Dick Allen twice in 1 week to do different teams. That's one of only several bizarre stories, including he had a full scholarship to go play for Bo at Michigan and turned it down to play pro baseball.
Bo, he had a full scholarship to play for Era. Era couldn't believe it when Essien, a good Catholic boy, turned down Notre Dame. It's a lot of wild stuff in his
background. I mean, he could have played football, took baseball, and not only did he play for 17 years in the majors and the minors for so many different teams from Carolina to Hawaii, but he also managed for a bunch of teams too, including the Chicago Cubs in 91. And check this out. The Tigers aren't playing today, but Essien's team is playing. The Utica Unicorns in the United Shore League is playing a game tonight in Utica. So it's a crazy life, and Jim Essien will join us a little bit later. But
when did the Tigers play Pittsburgh? I thought they were done now, and they had a weekend series with Pittsburgh. I must have misread that somewhere. They're playing the Pirates, aren't they, Brandon, this weekend?
But today's Thursday, so I said they aren't playing tonight is what I said. But yes, they are playing in Pittsburgh starting tomorrow. Okay. Their four games with the Cardinals this week were canceled along with 21 total games as baseball. You know, this is what baseball is like right now. Remember when your first kid was just starting to walk, he kind of staggered around the room. And the first time as you're filled with joy, you realize that he can go down at any moment and he's getting very near the sharp corner of the end table. And if he falls now, he can split his busted head open. And you sit there and say, oh my God, he made it. This is baseball's 60-game stagger and could take a huge pratfall at any particular moment. In fact,
It's all four sports plus college football. We don't know what's going to happen. Well, they all could be going down the drain soon.
Not the ones in the bubble. The NBA is doing quite well in the bubble, and the other teams in the bubble have done
quite
well.
The NHL seems to be too. Yeah.
And it's funny you bring up the bubble, because the Nats are now going to have their own bubble. They're going to maintain their team in their own bubble, the Nats really? In Washington. So, yeah, one of the other things I want to point out before we move along, all of a sudden the pitchers are catching up to the hitters and going right on past them. About 10 or 11 games in the last day and a half. The Marlins beat Baltimore 1-0. The Mets beat the Nats 3-1, and so on. And everybody shut out or only given up one run.
Well, remember, I watched some of that Nats game, and the reason the Mets beat him 3-1 is because Jacob DeGrom pitched amazing. Just an amazing pitcher.
And bottom line is the pitchers catch up with it. They're gone by him right now, and now you'll see all of these home runs, I think, flatten out a little bit. I do not believe that Judge will hit 72 home runs. I just don't think that's going to happen. But I'll tell you, one time, I sure thought he was going to hit 65.
Is he at the pace?
I'll tell you what, Aaron Judge Schmudge, he's only tied, at least going into last night, he's only tied for the Major League in home runs. You know who he's tied with? Nick Castellanos. Nick's having an unbelievable year. We're going to talk more about this as we go on.
But Castellanos isn't going to lead the league. Judge will.
Judge has seven as of today.
Well, of course, they play in different leagues, but yeah.
Yeah, Judge has seven and six games.
He must have hit one Wednesday night.
Yeah. Sure did.
Oh, man. So that's where baseball is at. And before this week began, Rob Manfred said, if it continues like this, we may have to shut the season down. Now he says that vigilance, if we continue to follow it, although some haven't. And he gave a little bit of a break to the concept that the Cardinals may have gone to a Minnesota casino and caught it. We don't know where the Marlins went and caught it. But he says the vast majority of our players have done a really good job adhering to what are difficult protocols. They're obviously contrary to the way people normally live their lives. Well, that's true.
Hang on a second. As far as the Marlins go, we got to defend them a little bit. They have now come out in the superstar shortstop at one time with the Yankees. He came out, had a press conference
yesterday.
Derek Jeter, and he's refused the story that everybody has said that they were in a gentleman's club. Actually, according to Mr. Jeter, they were passing all kinds of people. You're going to love this. They were picking up this virus, apparently, because somebody in the lobby was just sitting there trying to get autographs. And lo and behold, every time they go in and out of the hotel for coffee, some of them are going out shopping for clothes. Who would do that? Shopping for clothes and other things. And the teammates were going together. And they, you know what? They acquired a false sense of security. And that's probably what happened. I have a tendency to believe Jeter.
Okay. Look back at your own career. Even on days when you were scheduled to pitch that night, would you have voluntarily cooped yourself up in a hotel room for like 8 or 9 hours? Of course you went out. They want to get out. They're going stir crazy locked up in a hotel room.
But we don't go out in the middle of the day. We most of us would sleep during the day or play cards or go to a movie, but we wouldn't go out and rock and roll all night. We don't start that until 11:30.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you both this, okay? I go out too. I go to stores. I've even been to restaurants. I wear a mask and I stay away from anybody who doesn't have one on. I go, don't get down. It seems like you can be reasonably vigilant here. I don't understand why this is spreading like crazy amongst ballplayers who have the ability to steer clear of it. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's not being vigilant. Here's the biggest thing of all. This is the problem in America, and it's been since this began. And we've had our differences on this show about it. Just how dangerous is it? And the bottom line for most people, God, I said bottom line. That's your thing. I hope I don't say that again. You own that phrase. But it seems like it isn't that difficult.
It's not dangerous for most people. We know who this disease primarily affects. We do. So weren't you surprised when Jacob Panisuk, God, this kid's a great player. Important.
Please, before you finish, you said something that can't go down. We don't know how dangerous it is. That's the exact reason. So don't say we know it isn't dangerous for certain people.
Nobody knows.
Dangerous. We don't know what the long-term effects can be. You can get over it in a week or be asymptomatic. It could affect you later on. It's the lack of information and not knowing. So anybody who says it isn't that dangerous, why are so many college players opting out? Why are their parents not letting them play? Why are professional players opting out? Because they don't know what the long-term ramifications are. And anybody who claims they do is making it up. Okay, continue. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I don't want to get into this again.
Well,
so you can't.
Because we do have a disagreement about this.
You don't know, though.
It's okay.
That's fine. But I got two things to say. Magic Johnson, who I'm not a big fan of, as you know, Magic stepped up to the plate the other day and said, this is the way you get through viruses. And Lord knows he knows. For 29 years, he's been dealing and maintaining this virus and taking all the medications. He said, number one, take your medications. And then number two, don't ever think about being selfish. It's not about me anymore. It's about us. And if you live with that, he says you can live a long time with a virus. So he's just talking from a personal experience.
That's a good point. And after all, Denny, nobody wants to attain COVID-19 as Irvin did with the HIV virus.
That's unfair. November 7th. I get to work November 7th.
What he said.
1991, I walk into the office at Channel 2, into our windowless bunker of a building there at 9 Mile and whatever the hell it is. And there's a news conference about 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, I have now attained the HIV.
The HIV virus that I have attained.
Brandon, you're amazing. I don't know what do you got a file with like 9 billion quotes in there, Brandon? Is that what you got?
It's a trade secret. He won't tell us. Okay, I've asked him before. Nobody knows how. No matter what you say, he can find a drop within 4 seconds. It's
all right, Brandon. Here's one for you. Our producer, of course, is Brandon.
Don't test him. He's a big Michigan
fan. Brandon, who is Hunter Reynolds?
I have no idea who Hunter Reynolds is.
Hunter Reynolds is a reserve defensive back and special teams player at the University of Michigan. I don't know how, but he apparently, as a sophomore, is the guiding light, the founder, or at least one of them, of the advocacy group now known as College Athlete Unity. These kids have released a proposal, did it yesterday, the concerns of over 1,000 Big Ten football players is a quote, and they're listing a series of COVID-19 protocols that they demand to have instituted, or you know what? They ain't going to play. I'm not sure Bo would be a successful coach these days because it does seem like a lot of the inmates are running the asylum, and I cannot believe that Jacob Panisuk walked out on Michigan State. They don't have any returning starting defensive linemen now. Kenny Willis is gone. Panisuk's brother's gone. This is going to hurt Michigan State.
This is all stemming, and I've recommended you all see it. I don't know if you did the Real Sports that had Chris Hinton for the Hall. Is he a Hall of Famer? A great NFL lineman whose son Chris Jr. plays for the University of Michigan, and he and his wife, who's a retired lawyer, said there's no protocols. They're asking to sign waivers. Not necessarily Michigan, but other schools have, and the safety of the players is not being first and foremost. They have no union. They're basically forced labor. And this is starting to well up, and it's getting very, very ugly. And as it is, yesterday UConn said no football this year. They're an independent, which affects all types of other teams. They lost $13 million, by the way, last year with their football team.
Well, that's because they're no good, but UConn is still a pretty good program. They've sent a lot of guys to the NFL. So that's the first major FBS team to do this. But now, did you see this, Eli? NCAA councils have canceled all 2020 fall sports championships for divisions 2 and 3. So in Michigan, where this show is based, that means in the Great Lakes Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, GLIAC, that means that Albion, Ferris State, Grand Valley State, great program that they have in football. Hope, Kalamazoo College. Guess what, kids? You ain't playing football this year.
Yeah, and listen, Division 2 and 3 canceled all four fall sports. Louisville Division 1 cancels all their fall sports. We canceled field hockey, volleyball, all that stuff. Ivy League canceled their sports, and so did the historic black colleges. So Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren said just this week, it's fluid. It changes by the day. There's no guarantee we're going to have sports in the fall. And this is what the players are saying. Can you guarantee our safety? Can you guarantee, as I said a little bit earlier, if there are long-term effects from the COVID and we get it and still play, and I'm affected by this in 10 years, you want me to sign a waiver saying that you're free of responsibility when I'm basically an unpaid player and I'm allowed to opt out this year? So this is the little baby learning to walk, staggering. We have no basis to make decisions on this, and it's scary. And I don't think you can point the finger and say anybody's been wrong so far.
But you know
what?
No,
I don't think there's no villain.
Nobody's wrong. There's no villain. You don't know where it's coming from. You don't know how it got here, and everything else is so confusing and complicated at this point. But I'll guarantee you, there's a big percentage of kids out there that are probably becoming closer to being relieved, and more relieved that the idea that people are standing up for them right now and telling people, either you make sure we're safe all the time or see you later.
I think the parents are relieved. I think the kids probably
are. Oh, I think so, too.
But now, look at this situation here. Since you mentioned Kevin Warren, and I don't know about this guy. The Big 13 plus Rutgers has released its schedule for the coming season. And a big WTF, folks. Michigan's next loss to Ohio State is scheduled for Columbus on October 24th. Not the last game of the season. And after a 44-10 ass-kicking at Ann Arbor last year, they've now rescheduled Michigan State to go back to Ann Arbor this year. And the reason they say, I'm reading these articles, flexibility. Mm-hmm. Could you give me an example of flex? Brandon, you're shaking your head. What do you know about this?
Well, I believe Mark Fellhauer, who I spoke with, you all remember him, he has a theory that they want to get these rivalry games out of the way before they cancel the season.
That's interesting.
Yes. And by the way, the schedule.
Well, how come Michigan State has got to go back to Ann Arbor again? What's the point of that?
Who knows?
That happened a few years ago.
We'll figure out what the word flexibility means as soon as they start to play that game. I don't understand it either. Well, and by the way, OSU and Michigan, I don't know if you just said this, but OSU and Michigan are going to play on the 17th of October. So I think you're right. They want to move all the big picture games up front so they can get the money.
And of course, again, at the horseshoe. Dun, 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 dun. Well,
they also, even though it's set to start September 5th, they maintain the flexibility to push it back and may not play the conference championship game until the middle of December. So the whole thing is
Now get this. I don't know if you guys saw this. I don't think it's gotten a lot of publicity. We now go to Colorado State University.
Yeah.
Football coaches there have been accused of telling players and other staff members not to report it if they have any COVID-19 symptoms. The players and the members of the athletic staff told the Colorado newspaper that coaches threatened players with reduced playing time should they go into quarantine and tell anybody that they had COVID-19 symptoms. There's an investigation. You think heads might roll?
Look at this one. So did you read the one about Washington?
Hang on one second before you finish it. They have given them an 800 number to call anonymously so they can report if, in fact, these violations are taking place. They haven't got any proof yet that this has taken place. These are just all rumors. It's amazing the number of rumors that can start when a little bit of smoke starts coming up from the oven. Be careful.
There's a snitch line. Oh, man.
And wait a minute. The NFL's put a snitch line in now, too, by the way. So let's call and report Aaron Rodgers on a good Sunday that he's doing something. We'll bet the other team.
Now, the thing about this also, guys, is that I'm sure you know now that Michigan State has just resumed its football workouts. They're just one of six conference teams that have paused practices at various times over the COVID positive test. Northwestern just this week did so. Rutgers has been placed in quarantine after an outbreak. Ohio State, Indiana, Maryland have also paused workouts at different points in the offseason leading up to preseason camp, which is supposed to start this Friday. I mean, I don't think it looks too good.
No, in fact, I got two more wacky college football stories here. But first, I want to remind you that a little sliver of normalcy is returning in this ugliest. Yes, because the Aldo Y Center is back open. They're performing custom LASIK, which I got years ago, and also multifocal lens replacement, which I got a couple of years ago when cataracts befell me, whatever the word is. Anyway, the staff is healthy, following all the regulations. So go to Yaldo, call the number at 1-800-398-EYES, get a free evaluation, and change something you can change now, and that is your troubled eyesight. See 20/20 or better without glasses or contacts. And if you're over 50 and you see down the road, you're going to have, if you have visual problems now, find out about the multifocal lens implants. It's amazing. Just call 1-800-390-EYES or go to Yaldo Eye Center. Tell them No Filter Sports sent you. And reminder, another sponsor is back with us. So glad to re-welcome Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln, my go-to dealership for luxury cars. I told you before the pandemic how much I love my Nautilus. Don't need to repeat that. With nearly 100 five-star reviews in July alone, this is the place to go. Woman writes, by the way, my entire experience was more than wonderful. The guy she used there to get her car really cares about his clients. Thanks again. Call the legendary dealership, Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln. You can go online with the buy effortlessly at starlincoln.com or make an appointment to come in at 248-354-4900. Star Lincoln, legendary dealership, a luxury car, as you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
So here's another thing, Eli. I'm a little surprised you guys haven't brought it up yet. So let's stay in Detroit with the FLs. And the big news this week, Matthew Stafford didn't test positive for COVID-19. It was a false positive. So his wife, Kelly, comes out. She's ripping the NFL over this. And it makes you wonder how many other false positives have there been when we're saying, oh, these nine guys tested positive for COVID-19. I don't know.
But whatever you do, don't imply that they're not doing the right thing. That's number one. Number
I didn't
two,
imply that.
And if they do get test positive, they do another test in a short period of time to make sure that the first one is correct. So let's not throw it out the window by just making a crazy statement that it's a hoax. Let's not use that
word. I didn't say that either. Are you out of your mind today?
Calm down.
All of a sudden, you imply things.
You?
Bob, you're always implying something other than what it appears to be.
To you. Well, I don't know why Kelly Stafford was so furious and that she would go public ripping the NFL, Denny. So
Because it didn't work. And whose fault is it that it didn't work? Is there a villain here? This is the quality of testing. But I'm shocked at this. The reason I'm shocked is that the NFL, like the other leagues, have an advantage over the rest of us. They've got their own doctors, their own connections, their own support from everybody involved, from the state to the president, to make sure this works. And when you test the guy over and over again, and some are positive and some are negative, what does it say about testing? That's what she's upset about. So she's blaming the NFL. But it goes.
And that's just what I am. That's the only thing I implied, Eli. What does it say about testing? And I answered my own question. I don't know.
Yeah.
This is what it is.
She said we were all tested day after day. all negative, including Matthew. He tested again negative, then again and again tested negative. But, you know, she said she's been losing her mind over how her family has been treated. This is even more serious. When it was written that he had the COVID-19, the people that are saying nasty things, tweeting and wherever else in the grocery store, I was told I was endangering others. My kids were harassed and kicked off a playground. The country has gone crazy.
It has, and we haven't even gotten to the other main issue, which seems to take up not just our time on this show, but most people's time, and that's the Black Lives Matter thing. I hadn't seen an NBA game yet. Not too happy about this, the constant demonstrations, but I wanted to see Okie City and the Lakers on Wednesday night, so I recorded it. And yes, they had another big presentation of Black Lives Matter just 2 days, as you've heard, after a mansion rented by a former NFL player featured a party with shootings in L.A., two dead as a result. That's just, you know, real video of fans in the stands from the past at these NBA games in the bubble, either, boys. If you notice this, computerized video of fans. You look closely, many of the fans were waving to me from the stands, the quote-unquote fans. Coaching staff sitting 2 feet apart, no masks. Rachel Nichols on ESPN wore a big black mask for a report. Wasn't anybody anywhere near her except the cameraman who was 6 feet away. And how about the NHL playoffs? Have they been better? Yeah, but it's still watching hockey in the dead of August. I've seen 4 or 5 games so far. There are no fake fans. 2 arenas are tastefully decorated. You never see empty seats because the puck doesn't ever bounce high enough. And the only demonstration they have is a simple sign on the scoreboards that reads, and I quote, "We skate for Black lives." Funny. The only black player I saw on the ice was Seth Jones, the great Columbus defenseman, well, still a former NBA star.
But so what, Bob?
Come on, Bob. You understand what you're saying.
So I'm sure, fellas, so what? I'm sure that all the hockey players playing right now are indeed skating for Black lives. Cut the crap.
Bob, please. You know, let me also throw one thing out. Since I'm living through a personal event with this COVID right now, and I'm going to tell you right now, I've been quarantined since Monday. And we're waiting. The thing that's most frustrating about this is that the test result hasn't come back yet. And it was taken Monday.
So why were you tested? What happened?
I had a temperature. Temperature went up to about, one time it went up to 100.4.5. And then it's slowly come back down. And I'm now 99.9, 99.8, something like that. So, but I have been monitored for the last 3 days, 3.5 days by my doctor.
Where'd you get your test? You just went to the doctor's office and got a test?
My doctor works out of Beaumont. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just letting you know.
I wish you had let us know, because that's very concerning.
Well, I talked
about
it.
I wasn't talking about the COVID.
I talked about it the other day, but nobody heard me. And you really didn't. I mentioned it the other day. But it is really trying. You know what it is? It isn't. I mean, I feel pretty good. I mean, I have no real bad feelings. But I'll tell you, it's the anxiety of it.
Yeah.
Eli, we've known each other a long time. I don't get nervous about things. I don't jump up and down, never. And I'm going to tell you, this has got me anxious. It really does, because I'm thinking, well, what the hell is next since it snuck up like this? So let me wait and see. Hopefully we get the negative today.
I always hesitate to talk about race because you can sound insensitive.
The other big topic, though.
It's okay. Let me finish what I'm going to say. I understand what you're saying. Black Lives Matter and hockey may not seem like a great connection. I understand that totally. But here's another one, and I'm going to be very careful here because I need to be. The situation at TCU is particularly bothersome. Do you know what happened there where the coach, Patterson, was angry at a player who had posted a picture of him and his girlfriend, a national girlfriend day or something like that, named Dylan Jordan. He accused Gary Patterson of saying a racial slur during a practice confrontation about the player's use of the N-word. In other words, Patterson said to the player, "I don't like the fact that you guys use the N-word all the time," but he said the N-word himself, and then the players boycotted practice because he said the N-word, commenting on them saying the N-word. They're allowed to say it. He isn't allowed to say it, and we know how that goes. I'm going to tell you a story about it.
And, of course, we just apologize to everybody but the four of us sitting here personally.
Right, he did. He apologized. He should have said N-word. The point is, he just never say it. But here is the terrible dualism about this, and I can't solve it because I am not black and I am not part of the culture. But people can use the N-word over and over again if you're black and laugh about it, have some fun with it, and yet, of course, we can't, which is fine. My answer is no one should say, and I'm going to give you an example. Greg Kelcer, our great friend, We've known Greg, all of us, forever, and one of the nicest, measured, fabulous human beings that I know in any race at all. And he hates the fact that his fellow African-Americans say the N-word. And so I'm traveling with him with the Pistons for years. And Greg says, you know, Tayshaun Prince, really like Tayshaun, measured man, you know, comes in with a briefcase and everything. He's very studious. You know, I think he graduated, in fact, from Kentucky, smart guy. He doesn't say the word. He's pleased about that. Of course, pretty soon we hear Tayshaun saying the word and Greg is very upset. So then we get Ben Gordon. Now, Ben Gordon is not an African-American. Ben Gordon has got, I think, roots in the Virgin Islands.
Yeah, it's from the islands, I think.
Yeah, the islands. Yeah. And his parents were born in England. So Greg says, you see, I give Ben Gordon credit because he doesn't use the N-word. We go to Chicago for the first time after Ben signed a free agent contract to come to the Pistons. And he's sitting behind us in the team bus as we're driving from the hotel in downtown Chicago to the United Center. And sure enough, as we pass various neighborhoods, Gordon says, some of my N-words lived here. Some of my N-words live there. And Kelser puts his head down and goes, oh, my God. So it's
such an ugly word.
It's just an ugly word. Why can't we just ban it altogether?
And, well, we can't because we have freedom of speech in this country. We can't.
Well, we don't have freedom. No, well,
we don't have freedom of speech.
Yeah. Anyway,
we don't.
Very upsetting. And I'm not defending this Gary Patterson. I don't know all the details, but the framework of it where he said, please don't use this word. And he gets in trouble using this word that the players use repeatedly. So it's unfortunate. I wish we could get past all of this stuff.
I really, really thought we had. We had a African-American president, whom I don't mind saying I voted for twice. We had one of the most beautiful, intelligent, and classiest first ladies this country has ever had in Michelle Obama. I thought things are going pretty good, man. And now they ain't.
Well, yeah. And he used to hang out with Kanye West and with Jay-Z, whose songs are filled with misogynistic and the N-word along with bitches and hoes and everything else. So throw that page away.
It's frustrating, man.
Very frustrating.
It's so, especially for those of us, you and I, especially Eli, from the 60s, who were really counterculture people. It's like, you know, everything that we tried, that we worked hard for, you know, it's like you see the Freedom Riders in Alabama, and it's like, it's almost like it's been thrown out the window all of a sudden.
Well,
I think it's just the dichotomy, the division is very, very, as I say, disappointing.
Okay, Bob, why don't you bang out a couple of spots here and let's move on. Bang out a couple
yeah,
of spots.
Yeah, then we'll move on after that.
Let's go.
You regular listeners know that Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. They got five locations: Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman Automotive also claims Michigan's number one pre-owned status with its 1-800 pre-owned supercenter in Waterford. Now, you buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, and then you just relax because they have an exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guarantee. How about that? Goal is to make it a can't-lose proposition for you, and Feldman assures that with its exclusive guaranteed credit approval as well. So you visit any of Feldman's 9 total locations. They also include not just Chevy, Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia and Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram in Woodhaven. Now, we're confident that you're going to find what you want and what you need at one of those many Feldman dealerships. They're going to earn your business, and at the same time, you'll be supporting our No Filter Sports podcast. And by the way, you can also buy online if you want to at FeldmanAuto.com. Hassle-free at home or in the showroom. And if you guys are concerned, and you better be, about our environment, we encourage you to look into Power Home Solar. It's based in Detroit. It's America's fastest growing solar energy company. All of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels are also made in America, by the way. You know this, with solar energy, you're going to save money. You're going to help save the environment, and you're going to help yourself avoid those costly and infuriating power outages. This is because Power Home Solar has partnered with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. With Power Home Solar's panels and Generac, you'll be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for your in-home energy. Yeah, lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages forever. Owner Jason Waller and PHS even have financing that starts at $99 a month. Call them at 1-800-POWER90
and you'll save an additional $1,800. So please support them. So again, they'll continue to support us, and we'll continue to do the show. Thanks.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This ends our show.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
This next week.
Our show. That's right.
Just can I say this to our one affiliate station?
You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Yeah, now, Denny.
By the way, this
in
is
all the old familiar places.
This being Thursday.
It is.
The NFL, the opt-out deadline is 4 hours away, so it's hard for us to say whether there'll be a flood of people opting out. We know that a third Lions player has decided to put his career on pause. That's offensive lineman Russell Bodine. One of three Lions who've already opted out. We thought, you know, the whole Matt Stafford thing meant that he might have to opt out. No, he's going to be back to play, but we'll see whether it's a flood. And of all the sports that, you know, are on the bubble, let's put it that way, football seems to be the toughest, and we'll see whether that can make it or not.
In my personal opinion is we're going to have a lot more guys opting out than we believe. I just got a hunch. I mean, if you've got a family, especially a small family with, you know, babies, 1, 2, 3, 5, 6 years old, I think you're not going to expose your family to anything like that. And you can't blame them. You can't blame them for 1 minute. How about the PGA, guys?
Yeah, the
you
PGA,
want to talk about
yeah,
that? Yeah. Everybody wants to know who's going to win. Everybody seems to think Brooks Koepka.
Well, that would be three in a row. That's never happened. That would be wild. But he's playing really well these days.
Well, here's one of the problems with the golf course out there. First of all, it's summertime in San Francisco, and that's a bad time because the air is so heavy out there. It's overcast. Like I said, the heavy air, the greens are very, very damp, which is good for the players because they can stick the ball really close to the pin. But I'll tell you what else they do. They let the dampness set in, number one. And number two, the grass grows up to about the size of your knees. You're not going to believe how thick the rough gets.
Sounds U.S. Open to me.
Yeah, and it's a public course. This is a
right.
Mute. Yeah.
That's exactly right. And I'm going to tell you something. I'll predict this. 10 under would be a runaway winner.
No,
I
it's not going to happen.
It's going to be
a lot less
be
than
somewhere
that.
Under 10 under.
So there's so many guys that could win. Koepka could win. Justin Thomas could win. Rory McIlroy could win. The list goes on. There's so many guys playing well. DeChambeau could win. So here's my question for you. What is more likely to happen if you had to bet your life on it? Koepka wins or Tiger makes the cut?
That's a great question.
You know, what a good question. Yeah. I
don't think he's going to make the cut. It's 50 degrees. His back is bad. He struggled. Yeah. I'd love to see him make the weekend because it makes it so much more interesting.
Makes
but
better.
I would say no better than 50-50 that he makes that.
What a trio they got going out at 11:30 this morning, San Francisco time. Tiger, Rory, and Justin Thomas all playing together. What a trio that would be. Wouldn't you like to sit there for 3 hours today, 4 hours?
Again, I love watching golf on TV, and the fact that there's no fans are the only sport that doesn't bother me at all. In fact, I like it better, like I said, and as I said last show, not to repeat myself, get the damn fans off the playing field anyway. I'm glad to see it that they're unimpeded. There's no extra breaks. It isn't like playing with Deuces Wild where some spectator in a little lounge chair, you know, with his straw hat on can kick the ball back into the fairway for you.
And
anyway.
I think Justin Thomas in Vegas, he's favored to win this thing. That's hard for me to believe.
He's just
the number one player
week.
In the world right now, isn't he?
Yeah. And plus he just won last week. He won the WGC with 44 of the top 50 players in the world there.
Yeah, Eli, I do want you to think about this. So with regard to your comments about spectators, to me, one of the great things about the majors and about golf in general is when you have, you know, an icon, be it Tiger or Jack or anybody else, and they got a 2-shot lead, 3-shot lead, whatever it is, and they're going into 18 on the final Sunday, the tournament's over, and they're walking up the course to the 18th putting green, and the fans go nuts with a long standing ovation. It's so emotional. It's so great.
Well, that's just Sunday, and I agree with you. That's just Sunday. But how about when a guy's on number 14, he's a stroke behind, and the big roar goes up? And where does the roar coming from? Well, the announcers tell you because somebody just birdied such and such. So there is that element of listen. Sound is an important part of sports. Sound is critical to all of it, from the fans to the crack of the bat to the sound when the and in golf. What's so amazing about golf is you'll see whether it's Dottie Pepper or Nick Faldo, a guy hits a shot, the sound indicates how well he hit it and where it's going to go and whether he hit it fat or thin. The subtleties of the game are so pronounced by sound. And so, yeah, but still, of all the other sports, that's the one where I can live without that.
Eli?
By the way, walking up the green at 18 on Sunday is only a very small smidgen of the 72 holes.
I know, but still.
Eli, answer a question for me. Which sound are you most familiar with?
Patty yelling, Eli, come here.
No.
He's most familiar with.
Well, it's either the thin one where all you hear is a little clink as you hit a line drive on a 40-yard shot that goes 50 yards past, or that awful chunk where you hear the club going into the ground forward a few feet. But hey,
how about the one standing in the trap and the ball starts to roll back to you?
unless you guys got something else you want to add on the PGA, and I'm not sure what else there is to say on Havsett. We were talking about long-term contracts in sports and how the Mets are just the latest team to have been burned by what happened with this idiot Cespedes the other day as he walked out on the club. So this is the source of our quote of the week. Maybe, anyway, it comes from former Mets and Dodgers catcher, the well-known Paul LaDuca, about Yoenis Cespedes going AWOL. He tweeted the next day, and I quote, "What he did was a punk-ass move."
Yeah.
Long-term contracts in sports. Now, I don't know if you saw this. The Jets have just released, unfortunately, former Michigan star offensive lineman Ben Braden of Rockford, just north of Grand Rapids. Hope he catches on somewhere. But they also just cut Quincy Enunwa. Now, you guys may not know who that is, but he was a rising star wideout with the Jets. He's been injured. They already knew they wouldn't have him all season, ruled out months ago. Now, the Jets still owe him $6 million this year, money that was guaranteed in a four-year, $36 million extension. He gets $4.1 million of his 2021 salary that was also guaranteed for injury. This guy wound up playing just one game on that four-year contract. One game, he earned a total of $20 million on that deal. And his production, one reception for minus 4 yards. Long-term contracts, fellas.
Well, how about we have Jim Essien coming up, who signed an amazing, in 1981, an amazing four-year, $1 million contract. Miguel Cabrera gets $75,000 every time he steps to the plate.
And how's that going for him so far?
Think of that. Think of that. 75,000 on 400 at-bats, 75,000 per AB. Go ahead.
And as far as Cespedes goes, listen, there's one thing about him. If he walked off the field like it looks like he did and walked away, he's not going to get paid. So whatever money they owe him, they can put that money and just give it to Rodriguez and his new girlfriend.
Rodriguez, what a
That's a crazy story, isn't it?
Listen, yeah, in this day in sports, which we can segue to now if we want to, in 2013, MLB banned Rodriguez for 211 games because of his participation in the Biogenesis Laboratory scandal he denied repeatedly for all those years. And now he can buy the Mets. He's got J-Lo as his wife. He's doing Major League Baseball. No,
they don't have enough money, Eli. All the New York papers say that's big pocket stuff.
But talk about Teflon. Give me a break. If Alex Rodriguez makes it back, where's Barry Bonds? Where's Roger Clemens? These guys are still in purgatory. And Alex Rodriguez is now celebrated again for being the great A-Rod.
And he's in New York. That's what gets me. He's in, anywhere else, he would not flourish like this. In New York, he'll flourish. I mean, just due to the nature of the city.
New York media being what it was, and Eli and I both know about that, being former members of the New York media, he's being crucified. He's being crucified by everybody there.
But even when he was doing well, he was being crucified in a lot of quarters. So, he never, ever endeared himself to anybody as far as I was concerned. I appeared at a lot of dinners with him, and it's always, if you ever took the word I out of his vocabulary, the poor guy'd be speechless.
You say that about Bob, too.
Yeah, Bob
said about me all the time.
So,
and the listeners would be deprived of hearing my wisdom, Denny, and my wit.
Let me give you a couple of this day in baseball, this day in sports. Fascinating. Okay, here we go. Speaking of the PGA tournament, Byron Nelson on this day in 1945 won his 11th consecutive PGA tournament. My God, he won 18 on the year. Lindy McDaniel, here's some great pitching stuff. Came in relief in the second inning and allowed one run in 13 innings for the Yankees and a 3-2 win over the Tigers. I do remember that game. Let's see. Moving on.
What you're talking about, guy? I mean, the young people listening right now, including Brandon, they have no idea who Lindy McDaniel was. You know, Lindy was a famous pitcher. Oh, yeah. Pitched with the Cardinals and bounced around. Yeah. But he was a famous pitcher way back when.
Left-hander.
Into account, yes. So, you know, the NFL-AFL merger took place after the 66 Super Bowl, the first one that existed when Green Bay beat Kansas City. So they had an exhibition in 1967, the first time an exhibition game between the AFL and NFL team. And the Broncos stunned the Lions 13-7.
Yeah, but that's not the big story about that game. You remember the story about that game because Alex Karras coming up and said, "If we lose to these effing guys, I'm going to walk back from Denver." They did, and Alex didn't.
And the AFL continued to dominate the NFL in the Super Bowl after they merged. Here's one for you.
And I can still hear the Barker, by the way, the evil Russ Thomas, when they drafted guys like Fred Biletnikoff, saying that Biletnikoff's not going to sign with the AFL. Why would you want to play for that crap league? We're going to get him. So they underbid, and they lost one of the greatest wide receivers who ever lived.
Very good historical note there. I remember 1973. Phil Negro no-hit the Pirates, 9-0, the first for Atlanta. But here's the deal. Phil Negro, and Denny, you're going to love this. In 1979, if you don't remember, he led the league in wins and losses. He was 21-20. He's the last man to lose 20 twice. You only lost 20 once, so you don't nearly get in Phil Negro's class.
No, I'm better than that. I lost 22.
Yeah. And he and his brother Joe, who won 223 games, won a total of 539 games.
Oh, my God,
games.
I didn't realize.
By
that.
Hundreds of games, the most of any brothers, the Perry brothers, Gaylord and Jim, were way behind that.
And the Negro guys, both of those guys were great guys, class acts all the way, 100%.
Danny, I've never asked you this before, but that brings up an interesting issue. I remember Sparky said about some Tigers pitch. I don't know if it was Mike Maroth or whoever it was, but he said as the season wound down and the kid had lost 18 or 19, Sparky said, "I'm not going to let him lose 20 games. He's not pitching again."
Well,
was there any thought about Ted Williams saying, "This is the great Danny McLean"? I'm not going to
lose
20 games.
Hey, listen, he told me that once we got into our beefs that he was going to do everything he could do to see if I could possibly lose 30 with his ball club. And I'm going to tell you something. If I don't go on a disabled list for like 28 or 29 days, I had a real serious chance of losing 30 ball games that year.
He had you finish up a doubleheader that had been suspended, so you could lose in the ninth inning and then lose the next game. He had you pitch that one too.
Yeah, so I pitched the first game. I finished that game. I pitched 7 innings in the first game of the two. I won it. And then the second game, I pitched 7 innings and I lost the second game. So he didn't get his wish, but he sure was looking for it.
And Eli can tell you stories growing up in New York as a wacko Mets fan about Roger Craig. What did he lose? 24 and 22 in straight games. 62-63.
I mentioned that to him. Of course, he was a hero of mine, and then I get to work with him with the Tigers, and he goes, "You got to be a very good pitcher to lose 22 and 24 games."
They keep sending you out after all.
Well, I will tell you this. Let me tell you how good of a pitcher you are when you lose 20 ball games. They immediately offer it. Back in my day, they would immediately offer you a 25% cut in your contract. How good they thought you were.
You know what? I think I've mentioned this before, but Michigan State's own Robin Roberts, one of the greatest pitchers who ever lived.
Yeah, one of the greats.
He won 28 for the Phillies. I forget what year this was, 52, 53. Then the next year, they paid him X amount of dollars, nothing. The next year, he won 23, and they send him a contract with a pay cut. Yeah. Roberts goes, "What are you talking about? I won 28. I won 20. He says, "Yeah, but you won 28 the year before. You only won 23 last season. That's why we're giving you a cut." It was just no wonder the unions survived.
Jimmy Northrup had a great year in 68, of course, he had a terrific year in 68. Jim Campbell sent him a new contract in 69 for the $5,000 raise. Yeah. And you know what he told him? "Well, listen, you got 10,000 because we won the World Series. Aren't you thankful for that?" And that's the wrong thing in the world to say to Jimmy Northrup, because he was sitting on nuclear bombs.
He was a red ass.
Red ass. That's a very soft definition of Jimmy Northrup.
Well, let me get back to this. 2010, you ready for this? Nolan Ryan and another group buy the Texas Rangers for $593 million. 10 years later, Forbes has them at $1.75 billion. So the value of the range has gone up $1 billion since Nolan Ryan bought it back then. That's pretty crazy. Ted Williams came back from military service in 53 on this day, went up and hit 407 the rest of the season. And Albert Pujols
wasn't happy about that either, Eli. Ted Williams had been a decorated pilot during the war. And then amazingly, they called him back for the Korean War.
Yeah. Two wars.
And Ted went. He was an American hero in two wars, and he went and said, you know, but I got to be honest with you, I did my service. I shouldn't have to come back for Korea, but he went.
Yeah. Well, Albert one of the other things with Ted, though, because I had a lot of bad moments with Ted, there was one thing about Ted that whenever he said it, whether it was true, close to being true, you said, oh, yes, Mr. Williams, absolutely. And as far as the Senators go, the only reason he took the job with the Washington Senators is because he lost his job with Sears. And Sears would not give him a new contract unless he had a high profile. So Bob Short came to him after finding that out, who owned the Washington Senators, and said, listen, Ted, I'll get you the money and I'll get you the Sears deal back. And Bob Short at the time was one of the biggest trucking companies in the United States. He picked up the phone, called the president of Sears, and the rest is history. Because he had that contract till the day he died.
Yeah. I didn't know that then. That's a great story. And why Sears? Because Williams was a great and fisherman. Avid fisherman. Mm-hmm. So he and guys like Kurt Gowdy, the same, they would be advertising all this fishing gear for Sears.
Yeah, and he would and he would do specials where he went fishing and put it on TV and all that stuff. By the way, Albert Pujols has 659 homers. That's one short of Willie Mays, 660. And I tell you, I don't know whether Pujols took steroids or not, but I don't like to see the all-time greats get their records eclipsed.
If you looked at Albert Pujols 8 to 10 years ago, he was so obviously a roid guy. And now you look at what he looks like the last few years. Gee, he's slimmed down an awful lot.
Well, he's still hitting home runs, though.
Hey, yeah, he still is.
So we got Jim Essien coming up in a couple of minutes. We're still going to do the mailbag, but I want to remind you that although coronavirus has changed our world, what hasn't changed is the opportunity to make smart financial decisions. One of those is take care of these crazy low interest rates, refinance your home through David Hall Mortgage. David's been around for more than three decades in the community. His team has maintained leadership in the mortgage market because they always offer better options or personal attention, which of course gives rise to lower mortgage payments and satisfied clients. They've also sustained their leadership, providing the fastest service in the business, generally 3 weeks or less. It's enabled them to garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners. Go to David Hall Mortgage, get started at David Hall Mortgage. Mortgage.com or just call 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. And Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, our guy, a proven, highly ethical, well-regarded expert in financial planning. That sounds like something we all need. So whether you own a business, want to protect and grow your family's financial well-being, consider talking to Luke Nowacki and benefiting from his experience and track record of success. Call him at 248-663-4748. Set up a complimentary consultation. Fire it away with all your questions. Let Luke lay out a plan that fits your individual needs. Again, Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, 248-663-4748. Advisory services are through Royal Alliance Associates. Other names, products mentioned here, independent of Royal Alliance Associates. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast, and we do have to say goodbye to our radio audience in a couple of minutes. We're kind of in the mixed bag here because we got to say goodbye to them in 2 minutes. And we know Bob can't even introduce the mailbag for less than 2 minutes.
I want to say this because this is going to take about a minute and a half. Now, I think virtually everybody in Michigan or in Detroit, and you guys, of course, listening to us right now, reads the Detroit papers. When I was a boy growing up there, you took the news in the afternoon or the Free Press in the morning. Now, I read both Detroit newspapers online every day of my life. This week, both editors of those papers posted a big headline notice. From now on, you want the main content we have? You're going to have to subscribe. Mm. So that starts, I think, August.
Oh, paywall. 13th. Paywall online?
Paywall, yes. Ooh. You can get some of their content, but not most of it. So here's the thing. I think they're going to charge, you know, $13 each for that. Okay, but how many?
Each year or each month?
Each month.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
So $13 a month. Well, I pay $11 a month for my local paper, the Palm Beach Post, because I think local journalism is critical.
Well, you live
critical
there.
That we support it. Sure. But how many? But if everybody starts charging, pretty soon you're going to be paying for the New York Post, at least the things that I read, ESPN's website, CNN, whatever you read. And you're going to be laying out this much money based upon what the news and Free Press plan to charge. You're going to be laying out $1,200 a year.
Bob,
subscriptions.
That's okay. But the point is, journalism shouldn't be free. The big mistake.
I know what you're saying.
Giving it away. Why should I get to read the Free Press without paying for it? I wouldn't read it if I had to pay for it. I don't get the so.
Okay, here's the thing. First of all, they've already established it's going to be free. And the more, you know how this works above anybody else, Eli, the more looks they get, or whatever they call them online, the more advertisers they have. Look, they're advertising online. Advertisements are pop-up ads everywhere now. So now they're going to charge me. And are they going to still go on with these pop-up ads and ads everywhere? I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, I think this is like I have with Spotify, which is a great deal. I pay for it, $10 a month, and I don't have to listen to the ads. If I don't pay for it, then I got to look at the ads. So if you pay for it online, they will eliminate the ads from you. So they've made a decision based on where they think they'll get more money from subscriptions, less money for ads, and it works out for them. I got to say goodbye, WCWA in Toledo. Bye-bye. You've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Before we talk to Jim Essien and do the mailbag, I do want to remind you of a programming note. I recommend that everyone in our audience, if you have HBO, watch The Weight of Gold, hosted by Michael Phelps. You will realize, and this applies to Denny and anybody who's ever played pro sports, the pressures, the lack of the depression that can be caused by poor play, by whatever goes into it. And this is a very revealing documentary about the trauma of Olympic athletes and what happens when you win or when you lose, the pressure on all of them at a very young age. So I would recommend that.
And I want to say one thing about it. It really defines the word loneliness. When things don't go very well, and even when things go pretty well from time to time, it really does redefine the word loneliness.
Exactly. And here you take a 20-year-old kid who was pushed 4 years. Yep. With all the youth, parents pushing him and all this and all the competitions, and then suddenly the Olympics is over. So does he have to do it all over again in 4 years and hope? Or does he move on with the rest of his life? And what does he do? He's only done one thing all of his life. Right. Very, very traumatic.
But that was a very cryptic comment by you, Denny. So when things weren't going well for you, when you lost a game, did you feel lonely, depressed?
He meant his career when his career was over.
When his career is over, more or less.
He meant the career
I'm
over.
Gonna tell you, okay. Even during the season, when you weren't going well, very few people talked to you. Right. The only time people talk to you is when you're going well. And I mean, more so in a professional occupation than anything else.
This is the dualism of fans.
Right.
When you need their support the most, they boo you because you're playing crappy. When you're playing great, they cheer you. When you don't need their cheers necessarily because you're playing great. So this is another one of the traumas that just the nature of being an athlete causes. All right, let's knock out the mailbag before we talk to Jim Essien. What do you got, Bob?
Your favorite part of the show, Mr. Z. God. First of all, folks, saying. You can tweet us. He's already getting antsy, folks. You can tweet us at Eli Zara, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. Here's one from Transplanted Detroiter, another one from Southern California, Randy Wright, who writes, great job on the podcast by you three blokes with Brandstatter. Very informative and entertaining. Brandy was a great interview subject. Ron Grubbs is back with us again. Once again, it is a can't-miss episode of No Filter Sports Podcast. Great discussion of what's going on in sports and with Michigan football. As usual, I was left wanting more with Eli, Bob, Denny, and Brandy. And you know, I'll say something else, Eli. Grubber added this, and I'm hearing this from a lot of listeners. He thinks it's crazy, and I do too, that this show is not on 97.1 in Detroit, at least on the weekends. Play one of our shows on Saturday and the other one on Sunday.
Want to comment
on that? Go ahead.
I thought the same thing, but I don't run radio stations, and there's reasons why, but... Yes, it would seem to make perfect sense. But
it would
go
seem
ahead.
To, wouldn't it?
The point is they would have to share money with us, and they don't want to share money with us. That's why we're not on that station. But go ahead.
So we also got the usual complaints about you-know-who, folks, the man with ants in his pants. Detroit Built tweets from Phoenix. Nice interview with Jim Brandstatter, Bob. Sound like he has some nice pipes. Too bad Eli had a bus to catch. Brandy was ready to sing until the cows came home. Eli gave him the hook. We go back to the Tigers 84 show, which everybody watched, and Eli Zarrett hosted all the years Eli spent around Sparky. The Captain Hook thing kind of rubbed off on him, I think. Jimmy Lyons writes, after every show we do, you absolutely nailed it with your Brandstatter interview, balancing the fun stories and hard questions perfectly. You deserve big kudos for asking the tough questions regarding the ongoing Anderson investigation at Michigan. And the same needs to go to Jim Brandstatter, who answered the tough questions honestly and thoroughly. But not everybody was so complimentary. From our asknofilter at gmail.com, where you can write us, JD says, I was looking forward to the interview with Jim Brandstatter, but what he said was a disappointment. His hero worship of Bo has blinded him to the facts at hand. He essentially called it a money grab by the accusers, which is a slap in the face to all sexual assault victims. Just because Bo is dead doesn't mean it didn't happen. The university has had a violent professor molesting students for 20-plus years before quietly retiring, an opera guy accused of rape, an athletic director who's less than transparent about a lot of issues, a gymnastics coach cheating on his wife with a freshman athlete, the man promoted to provost of the university, even though people saw red flags all over the place regarding his conduct, and the chairman of the Board of Regents, who was molested by Dr. Anderson and did nothing to ensure the safety and well-being of athletes and students until after Anderson was publicly exposed. Leaders take action. Leaders ask the tough questions and make the difficult decisions. In Ann Arbor, it is only about the brand, the brand, the brand. You guys want to comment on that?
Yeah, I do. Chuck Christian is the one who broke this story. He's the guy dying, sadly enough, of prostate cancer, and said he was terrified to go see any doctor after the trauma of dealing with Dr. Anderson. The only other person to come forward that we've seen quoted is the quote-unquote John Doe, who claimed, and it may be true, but he claimed that he was a Michigan broadcaster and went to Bo. Never identified himself like Chuck Christian did. And my point was that, and Brandy agreed, anybody, I was a Michigan broadcaster too. I did the cable TV games. After Brandy left, I did the play-by-play. I could have said the same thing. I could have been John Doe and tried to get some money. I don't know whether this guy is real or not, but why don't you come forward and tell us who you are? Why not tell the story? Why hide behind it? Chuck Christian didn't hide behind it. So that's the only thing Brandy was saying. How can we believe this guy? How do we know what he said? Who's there to corroborate and defend Bo?
You know, and I'll make this quick, that there probably is an NDA in place right now, non-disclosure agreement. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to stay there until somebody either starts writing checks or somebody settles this thing. And I think that's probably the reason why we're not getting more people out of this and more people coming forward. Because I think just NDA or not, it takes some guts to speak up with something like this. Because sooner or later, and we all know this, that name and those names are going to come out.
We've talked to a whole bunch of well-known former Michigan players here. Both Eli and I have. They don't want any part of it. The closest we came was Stanley Edwards on the show when I asked if he'd been personally abused. And there was that pregnant, 1 minute pause until he said, next question, please. It's embarrassing. I mean, there's no question it's embarrassing about this. Whatever.
I hope more does come out, and I hope we do have the answer.
Yeah. All right. So continue on. Listener.
Somebody once said, this too shall pass, Bob.
Well. Yeah, but what damage to the University of Michigan?
I can tell you,
and its reputation.
They'll get over it.
Jim Campbell always used to say, "This too shall pass," and I thought that was a very well spoken kind of biblical type of thing. And sure enough, somebody said years later, "It's in the Bible." He took it out of the Bible. This too shall pass. Biblical phrase.
Continuing on with this about the Brandstatter thing, which really why so many people have listened to that show and commented on it. And if you haven't, shame on you. Go listen to Brandy. I don't care if you went to Michigan State or whatever. He was great. Listener Dave Hoffman writes, when Joe Paterno was confronted with the Jerry Sandusky situation, he went to his superiors, just like Bo did with Canham. That's all he did. And he was then fired and condemned by many, including all the University of Michigan media homers. I wonder if Bo will get the same treatment, or will they throw Canham under the bus in order to protect Bo's reputation? As far as Harbaugh's performance and what Brandy said, in 5 years at Michigan, is he really doing a great job? I mean, other than having a better record than Brady and Rich Rod, what's he done? 0-5 against Ohio State? Only one of those losses is by single digits. 1-4 in bowl games. Only once in 5 years has Harbaugh finished higher than third place in the Eastern Division of the Big Ten. Doesn't seem like a great job to me. And now, Denny, listen to these words. Matt Jennings sends this in. Denny, your point of view towards kneeling during the national anthem, the BLM movement, partisan politics, et cetera, and pretty much everything that's going on right now, is so sobering and logical that it really helps answer a lot of interesting questions about what's happening. I take my hat off to you, Denny, for speaking your mind so well and at the same time being incredibly respectful towards everybody else's point of view. Yes, age does bring forth a lot of wisdom, but I think this is more than just your age. I think you're just a good man with a good heart, following what he believes to be true. I wish more people could approach things the way you do.
Thank you.
And
very
are you
much.
Blushing? I you must really be blushing.
Yeah.
Well, used to, by the way,
I've been trying to write that letter for months.
You used to be so much more of a hard ass. You really softened over the years.
I really
well, I
have.
Hope we all do.
I don't know why. But
Hey, folks, you can also call us anytime you want. You can leave a message or text us at 760-89-BALLS. Now, dig this from regular listener Ty Emily.
Wrap it up, okay? Last one.
There's more.
Look at that man with ants in his pants. I got a whole bunch of stuff here, damn it.
I don't cut you off. You would go for another hour and a half. So make
this the entertains people. Denny loves it. Brandon loves it.
The well, I don't know.
Nobody likes it.
Hang on a minute. Nobody loves it.
They pretend to. Go ahead. Last one.
All right, Denny, I retract that last letter then. I retract that last letter.
Okay, just finish.
I want to get my test results sometime today or tomorrow.
And I got a tea time in 2.5 hours. Let's get going.
That's always with you. It's what time's tea time? You know, I got nothing to do down here in Florida.
You killed another minute. Just get into it. Let's go.
You killed another minute. So here's Ty Emelander, and he says, oh, my. Did Bob get away with one on Monday? He said the Tigers should have signed Castellanos and moved him back to third. In 2017, Nick was picked as the worst defensive starter in all of baseball. Bob says he watches all the games. Either his memory is going, or like the old saying goes, baseball is like church. Many attend, few understand. He's the worst third sacker in Tiger history. Well, Ty, listen closely to me now. Nick Castellanos' 955 fielding average as a third baseman in his years with Detroit is not great, but it just about puts him in the top 100 all time, right at the level of Eddie Yost, Tigers' third baseman of a couple of years. His numbers as a Tigers' third baseman on the all-time list put him ahead of Frankie Malzone, Schmidt, David Wright. I'm not going to take this crap from a listener who doesn't know what he's talking about, or from you two jerks.
I know a little bit about it, and I can tell you the only balls he gets to are almost hitting him in the nuts. Okay, those are the only balls he ever came close to catching at third base. If he had to make two steps to the left or two steps to the right, it was a double.
Doesn't
matter. And that's why he should play third, because he can only take two steps and you don't have to go back on a fly ball. What, Brandon? Go ahead.
Doesn't matter to me. I'm telling you, this guy might suck fielding the ball, but you know what? Right now he is leading the National League in home runs, RBI, slugging percentage, OPS. He's killing it at the plate, and that can really help.
And I'll tell you something else. Brookie's career fielding percentage was .543. All right.
What?
And the other thing was with Castellanos,
.543. Oh my God, Lord!
You don't move him to right field again. Castellanos, you let him get better at third. You'll let him get better at third because he's going to hit, as Brandon said.
He's never going to play third.
They created the DH for guys like Nick
Castellanos. I'm not going to argue with that, Eli. All right.
Hey, it's been a great show. Let's not.
So why is he in the National League then? Why didn't the Tigers keep him? Ridiculous.
Because they didn't like him.
Why not?
Didn't fit in the organization. No application.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, he's not a good fit for us.
Hey, let's talk to a great fielder, Jim Essien, an outstanding catcher for 12 years.
You got numbers on that, Eli?
Jim Essien, a multiple sports star in Detroit in 1969 when he was 18, turned down a full ride opportunity to play football for Eric Parsegian, Bo Schembechler, and God knows who else in order to play
Duffy Doherty.
Duffy Doherty, in order to play professional baseball, crisscrossing across America from the Carolinas to Hawaii on a 17-year major and minor league odyssey, later managing many teams from rookie ball in Miami to the Chicago Cubs in 91. One of the craziest examples of Essien's wild twisting and turning saga came in 81. The White Sox had traded him to the A's in 78. And then bumbling owners Einhorn and Reinsdorf brought him back in 81, soon creating a bizarre logjam at catcher. Listen up.
Bill Veeck has made up for what he calls one of his biggest mistakes, trading catcher Jim Essien to Oakland in 1978. Tonight, the White Sox signed Essien as a free agent. He got a four-year contract worth more than $1 million.
Most important among the heavy investments has been the $3 million contract given to free agent catcher Carlton Fisk. Not since Dick Allen, nearly a decade ago, has a new player been welcomed into the Sox camp with such fanfare. Ironically, Bill Veeck had shelled out nearly $1 million for free agent Jim Essien about 2 months before Reinsdorf and Einhorn signed Fisk. Essien and Fisk give the Sox the most expensive, if not the best, catching in the American League.
Oh, Jim Essien joins us now. Was that how it happened? Did you think you were now the White Sox starting catcher? They go out and get Carlton Fisk 2 weeks later. Is that what happened?
Yeah, Eli. What happened was I played for Oakland in 1980 and became a free agent. Played for Billy Martin in 1980.
Oh, God.
Became a free agent, signed with Bill Veeck in the Chicago White Sox. Bill Veeck then sold the team to Reinsdorf and Einhorn. Oddly enough, Carlton Fisk was not offered a contract by the Red Sox in time. They missed the deadline to sign him, and he became a free agent. The new owners went out and got Carlton Fisk. They went out and got Greg Luzinski. So they got some big names, and that's how it all went down. So once again, I had to play behind a great catcher in Carlton Fisk, just like I had to do in Philadelphia with Bob Boone there.
Jim, this is Denny McLean. How are you?
Denny, I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
It's good to talk to you. Did you play? You played for Martin.
I did in 1980. That was the year, as you recall, I believe there were upwards of 90 complete games that year on Oakland pitching staffs.
No kidding.
I believe Rick Lankford had as many as 27 complete games.
That's a lot. That's a lot in 1 year, isn't it?
Well, did you like Martin playing for him?
Well, you know, he was quite a personality, very aggressive, and, you know, he yelled at everybody. It didn't matter if you were a coach, a superstar, or the ball boy, he was yelling at you.
Jim, you played.
At least he wasn't punching you in the face like he did everybody else.
Well, I always kept my eye on that right hand of his.
You had to.
Jim, you played for five different teams in a 12-year Major League Baseball career. The only team you didn't play for was the only team you wanted to play for. And I used to interview you all the time when you'd come back to Detroit and ask you about this, because we had so many mercenaries on the Tigers. They wanted nothing to do with Detroit. They wanted out of town. And all you ever wanted to do was come home and play for your boyhood idols, right?
Yeah, I would have loved to have done that. Fortunately, I played 10 of my 12 years in the American League and was able to come in a couple times a year to Detroit. Ernie Harwell would always interview me as well. I would leave, you know, I have 12 brothers and sisters, so I left a lot of tickets. Always got interviewed by guys like yourself, Bob, and Ernie Harwell. Really enjoyed coming, playing at Old Tiger Stadium.
Yeah, and not just, and I used to talk to you too. And there was another guy. I don't know. Now, did you graduate from Troy High or somewhere else? Because McCaddy.
No, he went to St. Martin's.
You went to St. Okay.
Yeah, I went to St. Martin's. Steve McCaddy was from Troy, and I raised my kids in Sterling Heights in Troy. So I knew Steve. We'd play a little hockey in the off season, a little bit of golf. Also, Ernie Harwell, 2 years, he and Miss Lulu stayed in my new home in Sterling Heights when I was off playing for Oakland or Seattle or somebody. So I was his landlord.
That's hilarious. Tell us, because we brought it up in the intro, about your high school football career and the recruitment and Arap Parsegian, Bo Schembechler. How did you turn these guys down? Or what was your thought process that made you go into baseball instead?
Well, that's a great question, Eli. I was able to visit four campuses back then. I graduated from St. Martin High School, not the Poors, St. Martin on the Lake. It's Jefferson Chalmers area. Joe LaPointe and I grew up together. I was very good at basketball and I was very good at football. I was able to visit four campuses back then. I visited Michigan, Michigan State, Notre Dame, and the University of Miami in Florida. And came down to a decision, and I chose Michigan. Then that summer, I played on a Sandlot team in Detroit called A&B Brokers. It's a team that Teddy Simmons played for a couple years before me. One of the best in the city. We won the national championship that summer in 1969. Everybody thought I was a football basketball player. They didn't know that and so I was a free agent, essentially a free agent, and scouts started coming around, and I decided to sign with the Philadelphia Phillies. The bonus money was there, and I frankly liked the idea of playing every day rather than practicing every day.
Well, let me move to a different subject for just a second. How the hell did you become the manager of the National Greek baseball team?
Jesus, you're skipping ahead 40 years.
Plus, he's Armenian.
And I, by the way, I know the theme song of that team, but I'll tell you later.
Go ahead. Crazy question. Go ahead.
Well, my sister married a Greek. They had a son named Chris Demetro. Chris was a terrific ball player, probably 10 or 12 years in the minor leagues, as high as AAA for several seasons. He was eligible, due to his Greek background, to play for the Greek team in the 2004 Summer Olympics, which was held in Athens. They don't play baseball in Athens, so they allowed them to go to Greek Americans and Greek Canadians with a background, you know, as long as they could find the paperwork of Grandma and Grandpa, they would be eligible to get their Greek citizenship and play for that Greek team. So that Greek team in the Olympics in 2004 consisted of Greek Americans and Greek Canadians that had some baseball acumen. After the Olympic Games, they had all this equipment and they had a stadium, and decided that they would compete in international competition. They needed a manager. My nephew recommended me, and I became the manager of the Greek national baseball team.
Did they pay you? Did they pay you for this wonderful thing?
No, not at all. But we played in Portugal. We played in Athens, in Amsterdam, in Stuttgart,
nice,
in Panama, in Dublin, and last year in Bulgaria, which sounds like the sort of Bulgaria.
Frank Maloney, unfortunately, just died, the longtime Syracuse head football coach. He was Bo's assistant at the time in 69 when you and I both graduated from high school. And he said, Maloney said, you weren't just a Michigan recruit. You were one of their top recruits. But they thought you'd sign because, as you mentioned, you came from a Catholic family with 13 kids. You needed the money. So Jim Fry with the Phillies, longtime MLB manager, gave you $15,000 as a bonus, and the rest was history.
The money did help at the time. And again, I had a love for baseball that I don't think people knew about. You know, in the Catholic League in March and April, small little Class D Catholic League, due to the weather and everything, we probably only played a dozen games.
Yeah.
So, the previous year in the Sandlots for A and B Brokers, I played third base. They had a catcher on the team. This is after my junior year. They had a catcher on the team that was a high draft choice, and he wasn't very good. So I told my coach, you know, next year after my senior year, I want to be the catcher. So after my senior year, I'm on my way to Michigan to play football, but I became a pretty good Sandlot catcher. And having gone into the national championship series with the National Amateur Baseball Federation, I think some scouts discovered me.
Okay, so you go on to play for you sign with Philly, but it doesn't go that well. You're in the minor leagues year after year. You only get a cup of coffee for a couple of years with the Phillies. And then another crazy thing happens in your life, and this is almost too hard to follow, so maybe you can fill us in. You're traded by the Phillies in May 75, along with outfielder Barry Bonnell, to the Braves for catcher Johnny Oates and the great Dick Allen. But 8 days later, you're traded by the Braves as a player to be named to the White Sox to finish the trade that had been started when the Braves acquired Allen. So you were traded for Allen twice in 1 week for two different teams.
Yes, true story. Traded for Dick Allen twice in a matter of a week. I was up and down with the Phillies, Eli. I made it to the big leagues at 22 years old. They called me up from the Eastern League at the end of the season when they could expand the rosters. And then that was 73. And 74 and 5, I was up and down with the Phillies because they had Bob Boone. And they just, you know, he was just a hard guy to replace. He got all the playing time I didn't. So they traded me to the White Sox in that Dick Allen deal.
I noticed in your bio that you hit 33 home runs in your entire career. I just want to let you know, I gave up about 38 a year.
Yeah. Well, a kid around between me and Mike Schmidt, who I played with in Philly, between us, we hit over 500, Denny.
Well, that's right. That
that's what juts the John Warden line. He says Denny McClain and I were 35-7 in 1960.
Well, the thing about it is, Jim, you know, you hit 243 for your career. You had a very respectable major league career, but my God, all the injuries you had. Do you ever think about what you could have done in the big leagues?
Yeah, you know, no regrets. I did have some injuries. I did have some back problems that probably didn't show up on the, didn't put me on the disabled list, but. You know, I had broken leg, broken hand, broken nose, broken fingers, the whole routine.
You should have been a fighter.
Surgeries. But, you know, I think the thing that hurt me in terms of maybe getting more playing time was playing on the same team as a Bob Boone, a Carlton Fisk, a Mike Heath, you know, a Ron Hassey. These guys, Brian Downing, these guys were excellent, excellent players that played well into their 30s. And it was just hard to get playing time with being on the same team as those guys.
So you kept on getting traded, which is understandable because you were valuable even as a backup. People wanted you. 12 years is way beyond the norm in baseball. Some of the people you were traded for, besides Dick Allen, in 78, you're traded to the A's. You were traded for Todd Cruz in 81. You were
Detroit
traded
native.
And Rod Allen, another Tiger. You're traded to the Mariners for Tom Pachorek, a Hamtramck native. It was really old home week every time they moved you somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, they called me Suitcase Eli.
Yeah.
I traveled so much, and, you know, I played for five different teams, but I played for the Oakland A's twice, and I played for the White Sox twice. So, really, I was on seven different ball clubs over that 12-year period. But, you know, there have been a lot of great players out of Detroit. You mentioned Todd Cruz, and of course there was the Smoltz and Mayberry and Tanana and
Willie Horton and too many to mention.
Yeah, so many.
Goodness.
Yeah. And we've had a pretty good history of good ball players coming out of the Detroit area. And I was one that was born and raised in Detroit.
Jim, is there anything scarier than to be named the player to be named later?
Well, you know, you do the best you can. You try to get playing time. You try to provide what's needed on a winning ball club. And I really enjoyed my time. Yeah. Certainly enjoyed my time.
So then the Cubs fired Don Zimmer early in the year, and they make you manager. So you manage the Cubs an entire season.
Well,
pretty
he managed for years before that too.
And well, I understand that. But anyway, so if you folks think Essien had an easy time. He's talking to a Chicago Tribune reporter in his office when the phone rings. Okay, Essien, polite as always, says to the reporter, excuse me, I gotta take this. A woman talks to you. He says, she's 73 years old. Is this Mr. Essien? Why did you yank that young pitcher from the game last night? Tell us about managing the Cubs, Jimmy.
Well, you know, managing the Cubs, you couldn't wait for the game to start to be done with all the media hype and the media responsibilities. Even Harry Carey, I had a radio show with Harry before every game, and he could be cruel.
Was he sober?
Well, he stuck the microphone in my face one time and said, Jim, is your team lackadaisical, or do they just look that way? So once all the media stuff was done and the competition with the media there, and finally, when the game would start, I could relax and have some fun with that.
Yeah, you know, Bob mentioned that.
The World Series in 2016 kind of took all of us old Cub managers off the hook a little bit.
That's true. Jerome Holtzman, the late columnist for the Chicago Tribune, I believe it was interviewing Charlie Finley back in 1991 after they fired you. And Finley says, managing today is tough and a job I wouldn't want. And then at the end, he said, Jim Essien played with me for a couple of years. What a wonderful person. What a nice person. A very knowledgeable baseball man. Well, you become that way. Look at the places you played. I mean, when you think back to your career, Bob mentioned the five major league teams. You played in Mesa, Spartanburg, Pulaski, Peninsula, Carolina League, Reading in the Eastern League, Toledo. You played for Hawaii. When you think about your trek back and forth across America for 17 years, how do you look back on that, that incredible odyssey you took to play baseball?
Yeah, just incredible, Eli. And, you know, I had a wife and two children following me everywhere I went. God bless her. We added another child, sort of a surprise, 11 years later. I finally got out of baseball after the 1996 season when I managed the New York Yankees double-A team in the Eastern League. I got a beautiful World Series ring out of the deal, but I also had a two-year-old at home and a couple of kids going into high school. So I got out of baseball after 30-some years, became a financial advisor for 15 years, raising the kids, had an office in Troy, had a wonderful, wonderful business that was. Then I retired, and they keep bringing me back, Eli, as manager of Utica Unicorn. It's United Shore Professional Baseball League.
Tell us about that.
Tell us about Utica. How are you doing up there? I know you've got half a dozen kids or so already signed, and you see anybody on the board right now?
Denny, last night, Randy Dobnak pitched 6 shutout innings for the Minnesota Twins in Pittsburgh, his hometown, and I signed him to be a Utica Unicorn in 2017 out of a small D2 school in West Virginia. Wow. Where I saw him pitch because my son was his catcher, my youngest son, Daniel. So I saw him pitch his freshman and sophomore year at Alderson Broaddus University in West Virginia, followed him his junior and senior year, called him and said, "What are you doing?" He said, I'm driving an Uber. I said, "Well, come and pitch for me." He did. The Twins signed him a month later. Last year, he went from A-ball to Double-A to Triple-A to the big leagues, and he started last night again for the Minnesota Twins in his hometown of Pittsburgh. What a great story.
Congratulations.
You guys allow fans into the ballpark too, don't you? What COVID precautions are you taking?
You know, we're following all the protocol. Andy Appleby is the owner and CEO, and Dana Schmidt, Chief Operating Officer, Justin Orndorff, Director of Baseball Operations. Got a great staff. We're doing everything we need to do to stay COVID-free. Unfortunately, we can only have 100 people in the ballpark these days. Normally, there would be 3,500 to 4,000 people sold
wow.
out of that.
Yeah. Oh,
in
yeah.
Stadium in Utica for just about every game.
So how do these kids get paid? I mean, Andy was selling the place out the first couple of years. I saw you there your first year with Utica, and it's just a beautiful ballpark. Without fans, and I know the games are on YouTube, but where's the money coming from? Are the players getting paid, and is it just coming out of somebody's pocket?
Players are getting paid. They're professional athletes at this point. In terms of the revenue coming into the stadium, obviously there's sponsorship revenue. He's got a beautiful setup there in terms of suites and private tables, wonderful picnic areas and outfield berms. And unfortunately, there's no revenue coming in. Andy's been committed to going through the entire season. We're going to be playing up until September 27th, which is our playoff weekend. But we got some really good, exciting young players here. If there was minor league baseball going on right now around the country, we would have lost several players to those major league organizations. Last year, I sent 6 players on the Unicorns to major league organizations. So altogether, I think in the 4 years, we've sent 37 or 38 players to major league organizations. Other than sponsorship revenue, and everybody's sort of biting the bullet on this one.
Yeah. Are most of the kids that you get up there, are they new kids just coming into the systems, so to speak? And additionally, wouldn't that make managing really tough? You're getting first-year kids.
Yeah.
Benny, in addition to being manager of the Utica Unicorns, I'm also scouting director for the league. I try to find players for all the teams. So I use my contacts throughout the country, college coaches, professional scouts. We try to get players that have completed their collegiate careers, were overlooked, We get them in, we coach them up, with the mission being to get them to major league organizations. Sometimes you're successful at that in terms of, getting good players in, and other times the players turn out to be a little overwhelmed, so you have to go get somebody to replace them. We had a tryout camp on Monday. We had about 50 of these types of players come in, and we had a very successful, found some very good players, and probably plucked 12 or 14 out of that tryout camp to maybe replace some of the players that we have now that are a little overwhelmed.
No kidding. 12 or 14, that's a pretty good number.
We have a running inside joke on this show, Jim, and our listeners even partake in it, and that is any ex-athlete from any of the four sports that we've always had on, Denny McClain will always ask, did you ever want to coach or manage? And I saw an article in the Chicago Tribune about you written years ago when you expressed shock that your teammates in the big leagues did not want to do that. You said, I've always dreamed of coaching and managing.
Yeah, I remember that story, and it's true. I always thought that it would be a natural progression for me to go from a player to a coach or manager. And I literally played one day and became a manager the next. I was in the 1985, I was hoping to catch on again with the Oakland A's. I got cut the last day of spring training. I was 34 or 5 years old and still playing good ball. I went to Miami with two little children and my wife to play on an independent team in the Florida State League. And one day I was playing, and one night my roommate came in, Eddie Farmer, who passed away recently, good guy. Mm-hmm. He said, hey, Jimmy, you want to manage the ball club? I said, what's up? He said, the general manager wants to fire the manager and wants you to manage the ball club. So I said, well, I played that night, and then the next night I didn't want to play anymore. I just wanted to manage the team.
Wow, what a segue.
So, you know,
the state league, and after the season, the Cubs signed me to be a manager in their organization.
I guess this may be a tough question. You see a lot of guys, and a lot of guys in this league that you've done an amazing job to get them opportunities to play in major league teams and their affiliates. But you got a lot of guys who are overlooked. Maybe they're a little smallish. They went to small schools and don't have much of a chance. And you're trying to coach them up. Is it tough? Because you know what it takes to be a major league player. You know the price you have to pay and what the odds are. And you got a lot of kids that you know probably can't make it. How do you give them advice? Do you ever tell a kid, listen, go study to be a financial analyst because it's a tough league, it's a tough game, and you can't make it? Do you ever discourage a kid from playing, even when you know that he has very little chance, if any, to make it further in the game?
You know, no, you wouldn't discourage him at all, no. Eli, we kind of have a rating system for our players. There are some players that we know are not prospects, but they're good for the league. We know they're not prospects, but we need to fill out rosters. And there's other players that we think have a chance at a major league organization. And then there are some that we rank very high. We have all the technology that the major league teams use, so we're able to use objective data to market our players to major league organizations. It's well run. Our mission statement is to get them in and get them out to major league organizations. But not every player is going to be that caliber of a player.
Yeah.
But we do need the players that are good for the league.
Well, you are a classic example of being a baseball lifer. You're going to be 70 next year, and you are still at it since 1969.
Pretty impressive.
Still active these days. I'm an avid golfer, and I play ice hockey a couple times.
What other kind of hockey is there? What are you supposed to play, field hockey or Detroiter? Hockey town!
And I'm a resident of Florida these days because my wife and I spend a lot of time down there. So I play most of my hockey down there. And then here in Michigan, I get the best of both worlds. I spend my summer in Michigan, my winter in Florida. We have a place up at Higgins Lake. I had my 3 children and 6 grandchildren up for 2 weeks just a few weeks ago. So I'm living the good life. God has blessed me and allowed me to stay in the game in some capacity here with the Utica Unicorns.
Well, good luck to you.
I got one more question, Jimmy. When you see what's going on in MLB these days, and teams are losing games off the schedule because guys test positive for COVID-19, do you think baseball has gone about this the right way? And do you believe they will manage to complete this short season?
Well, I can't predict. I hope they do. I know there's problems out there right now with the certain, you know, the Miami team, the St. Louis team. I hope they get it in. I'd love to see some playoff baseball and World Series baseball. I'm totally enjoying the NHL playoffs right now and, of course, the NBA playoffs. I can't wait to watch the PGA tournament this weekend. Hopefully, it's going to be tough, but hopefully they can get through the season and get into the playoffs. I hope they do.
Well, Jim, thanks so much for being with us. A life well lived in baseball and out. And go Unicorns tonight there at Jimmy John's Field. Thanks for spending some time with us, Jim.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks for having me.
Terrific.
Good stuff.
I told you guys he'd be a great guest. Jesse is terrific. I called the ballpark and left a message for the PR guy trying to get him on a month ago. Nobody ever called me back. I don't know if anybody's at that ballpark anymore besides the one.
Do you realize that a lot of people don't call you back?
I try not to take it personally, Danny.
No. You say don't take – please take it personally. Okay?
Touché.
Well, let's sign off here. Great talking to Jim Essien. And by the way, coming up on Monday, we got – former Tiger Steve Kemp. The Kemper is a riot. He was the number one draft pick in 1976. Yep. Might have played with Essien in Chicago, come to think of it. I bet he did. I don't know. They might have crossed over there for a while. Coming up and next Thursday, we got Dick Vitale coming back. Dick Vitale is involved with some remarkable charities. Want to get his views on basketball, college basketball, will it happen again? And so that's what we got coming up. So thanks for joining us today, everybody, on the No Filter Sports Podcast. Have a safe weekend.
Bye-bye, buddy. Thank you.
Stay safe, folks.